So if our emotions are the way of understanding, we have to think about what is going into that understanding. What are the senses? What are we experiencing? What is the context? All of those things impact the emotional experience. So, welcome to another episode, the final episode of the season of Sitting at the Table podcast. Today is part two of Return of the King, Lord of the Rings Extended Edition. So, if you are watching, you'll notice that we actually have a video this time around. So, we've got a nice new backdrop, we've got a new setting, we've got videos that we are going to try once more to start uploading these podcasts, and hopefully YouTube doesn't continue to punish us like they were in the other
ones.
Today, we know the drill. For all two of season one, we've used this format. We've watched the movie. We each have three scenes we want to discuss, and we are going to share our input on things that we think young composers can learn.
Yeah.
Now, I've changed pace a little bit for this episode and last episode because Howard Shore just does so much stuff that I'm just kind of diving in a bit deeper. I'm just explaining what happens in each scene, what themes are being used, and trying to find little takeaways from there. But really, I'm just geeking out about this, right?
Yep.
So do you have anything you would like to say before we get started?
Yeah, I mean, similar. Yep. My approach with these ones were that, like, these are some of my favorite movies of all time. And, you know, I obviously, you know, anybody that's ever seen The Lord of the Rings is like, yeah, they're like the best. I've never met someone where they're just like, ah, they're kind of okay.
Or masterpiece.
Yeah,
masterpiece.
No, every person I've ever talked to, true science fact, has loved these things to death. So yeah, I definitely am going to take more of a geeking out approach too, I think.
Yes,
maybe I not. Think so. I'll try to keep it as, you know, as relevant, you know, as relevant as I can, but definitely. A lot of it's definitely going to be me geeking out over everything. So,
all right, shall we get started?
Yeah, let's do it.
So my first scene is Samwise versus Shelob. What was yours?
Okay. Mine is the famous Ride of the Rohirrim.
Ooh. All right. So we're going to go with Samwise first because that is chronological. All right. Let's do it.
Okay.
So for those who are just listening and not watching, let's recap the scene a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So all seems lost. Gollum lured Frodo into Shelob's lair. Shelob is a giant spider. And the plan was for Gollum to just wait for Shelob to eat Frodo, and then he would go find his carcass and take the ring from his corpse.
Mm-hmm.
Gollum is run off after being fought off by Frodo. Frodo thought he had escaped. He's just been snuck attacked by Shelob, and he's getting all wrapped up in webbing and everything. So it seems like it's a bad situation, but then Sam shows up. Samwise, who realized that Gollum was going to try and kill Frodo, turned back, raced to the situation, and he shows up, sword in arm. He found the light magic thing that the elves gave Frodo, and he's about to fight Shelob, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good.
Let's do it.
Let's watch it.
Yeah.
I love that scene so much.
That's a cool one.
So there's a little fun fact. This is actually one of my mom's favorite scenes from the books. There's mainly just something about J.R.R. Tolkien, the way he wrote it.
Yeah.
And thank you. It is fun.
Of course.
Yeah. There's somewhere he described the fight that my mom just loves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's honestly, that's kind of the reason why I took it. I had so much trouble picking scenes for the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Not because there weren't good scenes, but because I had a list like 7 different scenes that I could have gone with.
Yeah.
And so this is one of the earliest ones that I just felt like, all right, it's my mom's favorite. I love all these scenes. Let's just use this one, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that goes on in here that I want to talk about. First off, there's 2 basic kind of sound palettes we have. Well, 2 basic sounds. We've got, of course, Shelob's theme. Mm-hmm. And Shelob is one of 5 different monsters that we kind of see in these movies that Howard Shore wrote a specific theme for.
Yeah.
And they're all unique. Shelob, the cave troll, Durin's Bane, the Balrog, and that little tentacle monster thing outside of the Dwarven Kingdom. I am blanking on names today.
The Kraken-like thing.
Yeah, I'm blanking on names. Anyway, so there's a bunch of different creatures in this movie, this soundtrack that Howard Shore created a unique sound for, and he relied very heavily on more modern orchestral textures, kind of avant-garde, freaky, sustained kind of harmonies. And each one's unique, but that's kind of the unifying the unifying tool he uses. So because we talked about in the last episode that Howard Shore has over 90 themes that he wrote for this trilogy, which is mind-boggling, just a ridiculous amount.
45 is mind-boggling. 90 is...
insane. It's insane. Yeah. And so when you have that many themes, one of the few ways that you can organize them is through the use of sound palettes. Mm-hmm. So the Hobbits all have a sound that is very Hobbity. Tin flutes, fiddles, instruments like that.
Yeah.
The elves have a very elegant sound palette with choir and lush strings. The orcs have the sounds of industry that Saruman talks about, with like the clanging metal, brass instruments, timpani, all kinds of percussion.
Scariness.
Yeah. So there are a lot of different sound palettes that are used.
Yeah.
And the one specifically for these monsters is very unique compared to all of the other sound palettes. All the other sound palettes are very melodic. The monsters, these ancient horrors in these movies, are given a much different sound, something that's not melodic, something that's a lot more sound designy and freaky and unsettling. So that's really cool about the use of sound palettes to kind of organize your thoughts. But something I really wanted to talk about is when Sam shows up and he interrupts all of that. That when we are in the midst of Shelob's freakiness, that Sam, that's a technical term, by the way.
Of course.
Her freakiness. Yep. Sam shows up and we hear a very quick motif of the Fellowship. Bum, bum, ba, ba, bum. It's got brass. It's melodic.
Yep.
So it cuts through. It's noticeable. It's memorable. And it gives us hope because the Fellowship is associated with the good guys. In fact, something else I wanted to point out is that this theme of the Fellowship often wrongly gets associated with characters, and it's not. The Fellowship is not a character theme. In fact, there are multiple different types of themes that a composer can go with. Character themes is being one of them that tracks a character's growth and development, but this is a goal theme. All right, the goal theme, I'm sure there's a much more elegant term I could come up with, but a goal theme is similar to a character's theme, but instead of tracking the development of a character, it tracks the how close or far away characters get towards a goal. Now, the Fellowship, of the Ring was formed with a very, very specific purpose. Mm-hmm. Their job is to get the hobbits to Mount Doom, specifically Frodo, mm-hmm. so that he can destroy the Ring. It is their job to get the Ring Bearer to Mount Doom so they can destroy the Ring. So this theme, this motif pops up not for specific characters,
yeah.
but it pops up each time the Fellowship takes a step towards doing that job.
Oh, all right, interesting.
All hope is lost. Mm-hmm. All right, here. Frodo has been taken. He's been stabbed by Shelob, poisoned, and now he's paralyzed. He's about to get eaten. He's got the ring with him. All right, there's no way out of this. Then Frodo shows up. Bum, bum, ba ba bum. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, yes, the story is back on. All right, he can still kind of kick butt. Sam's going to show up. He's going to destroy some giant spider butt. And we're just going to... It's gonna be a good story. I don't know. I had more eloquent thoughts.
whatever like inspiring thing that you could have said there. spider butt
destroy some spider butt. I feel like I always get off to a little rocky start at the start of these podcasts, but that's okay. It takes a little time to get some momentum going.
Yeah,
but so to kind of sum up my notes from this scene is that you can learn two very powerful, powerful tools as a film composer. Mm-hmm. One is the use of sound palettes to organize your sounds.
Yeah.
And sound palettes being the different sounds, the instruments, but also the techniques and the styles. Having a more kind of like a thematic style versus a more athematic or non-melodic style mm-hmm. is just as great for sound palettes.
Yeah.
But another big one is that the themes that you use can be tied not just to the characters and their development, but the journey. So maybe a journey theme is a better term than goal theme. Mm. But each time the characters get closer to it, we can hear a theme of the Fellowship. We hear that theme go off when Aragorn tells the hobbits, like in the first movie, when they're over by the river and that army of Uruk-hai show up. Mm-hmm. And Aragorn tells them, run. And then we see the hobbits take off running and Aragorn unsheaths his sword. He's got two Uruk-hai up there. And then it pans out. You see, oh, there's a whole army of Uruk-hai charging at him.
Yeah.
And Aragorn's about to go take it on. And then you hear, bum, bum, ba, ba, bum. Ba, da, 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 dun, 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 da, da, dum. I'm actually kind of impressed that I was able to sing the whole thing.
That was pretty good. Yeah.
I usually mess up.
Yep.
That's
how good these themes are.
Very true.
These themes are.
Very true. They're singable, and if they're singable, they're more mm-hmm. memorable.
Exactly.
And I didn't end up accidentally singing a Christmas theme like I did.
Yes. You know,
like what was it? It was Spirited Away.
Yeah, it was that you either sang like something from Elf or the Panda Express.
The Panda Express.
Not the Panda Express. All right, there's my thing. There's my Rocky
Star. We're both sleepy.
Well, the good news is if we start from rock bottom, we can't get any worse.
Very true, very true.
It's only going to get better from here.
Stay with us, people. Please, please. I beg you, don't leave. So you were thinking about the Polar Express. Yes.
Just clearly hungry.
No, yes. Oh, Panda does sound good, though.
You're right.
All right. Anywho, so that's my first scene. Did you have anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, that one was actually interesting. I going back and rewatching it kind of brought up some other things that I was kind of following with it. Is the music actually changes very because I was kind of comparing it to like a fight in nature.
Yeah.
Right. So like in therapy, for just to be quick about it, we oftentimes relate our nervous system a lot of times when we're working on things, we have to like talk about our like lizard brain and all of that stuff. So this is actually kind of following like Sam's lizard brain.
Yep.
So like it's the brain that like, you know, fight, flight, freeze.
Yeah.
So like you're freaking out, you're fighting, you're courageous, those types of things.
Sam is goated.
He's the goat. He is the goat. Like Frodo didn't even need to be in this movie.
Greatest of all time to explain the slang.
Oh yeah.
Goat.
Frodo didn't even need to be in the movie.
No.
But in terms of that, like I found it kind of interesting how like actually if you listened very specifically, like to you know, the whole time to the music, really focused on it, mm-hmm. it actually changes with how the fight's going.
Yeah.
And like Sam's interpretation of the fight, it's like freaky for a second. You know, he gets in and he steps in and he's just like, what's up? I'm here. And it's all heroic. And then it gets like crazy for a second because like Shelob is like, okay, well, let's go. And it's just like, oh, we have a conflict now. And then we get going and it moves and it's like constantly moving back and forth between like Sam's getting the upper edge, but then he's also feeling fear in some instances too. Because like you're not going into a fight against a giant spider as a little 2.5-foot hoblet. Hobbit.
Hobbit.
Manlet. I was thinking,
you thinking Manlet.
I was thinking Manlet mixed with Hobbit. So I created Hobbit. I'm going to call him Hobbit for the rest of I'm doubling Hobbit. Down. He goes in as a little 2.5 foot hobbit, and he can't against this gigantic spider. Like, you know, how many people are scared of spiders that are this big?
Oh no. Yeah. You know?
So let alone one that's 4 times your size.
And I love that point you made, because I didn't notice it, but you talked about how the music shifts to follow Sam's perception of it.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment when it's going well, it sounds more triumphant.
Yeah.
When it feels like it's going bad, it gets more chaotic, more like Shelob. There's more of a tug of war. I love that description of you're following Sam's perception. Because we've talked multiple times about how for the emotion, you need to score the emotion of your audience. Mm-hmm. Right? And keep that in mind. But you can do both. You can score the emotion of your audience that you want them to feel, but you can tell a story of the character's perspective. That's one of the main functions of film music. It's the psychological function. In fact, that one function plays both. The psychological function of music is the most important of the three. All right, the psychological function forms your base. It does two things. One, it enhances the emotions of your scene.
Mm-hmm.
And two, it can reveal the thoughts of characters that aren't spoken.
Right.
So here you can create the tension. You can create the kind of anxiety that you want your audience to feel, but at the same time, the form and the structure of your music can help be used to inform what the character's thinking. So using certain tones and mood shifts in the music can help reveal that Sam thinks, oh, it's going well, oh no, I'm scared, whatever, all kinds of thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And since I've mentioned the first one, I might as well just do a real recap of the other two, so people don't feel like they have to look this up. But the psychological function is that it's the number one most important thing. Enhance the emotions and, when necessary, reveal thoughts of your characters on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's a really nice guy on stream, super smiley, super happy, and you want to reveal, oh, this is actually the bad guy. So the music, boom, gets a little bit intense, or it associates itself with a bad guy or something.
Right.
So those are two things that you need to do. Those are the most important. If you are going to do nothing else, you have to get that right. Otherwise, your audience will watch the scene with your music and think, that doesn't fit.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you been watching a bad movie and you're like, oh, well, that didn't fit?
Yeah.
All right. So number two, once you've got that taken care of, is something called the physical function. Now, the physical function also does two things. Physical function can either evoke a specific setting. So, I mean, like, how many times has a character walked into a desert and you hear that guitar, that slide guitar go like, bum, 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 and then you hear like a hawk in the background, like, gah, or whatever. So you can evoke physical settings like that through cliches and stuff. Or if it's like more of like a winter wonderland, you can add like Celeste. There are different things you can do to help make it sound more like the area.
More like what it looks like.
Yeah, you create a vibe for the world.
Right,
not just the emotions.
Yeah.
So that's what the physical one does. It creates a sound for the physical world that you're in, whether that's based in cliches or you're just creating a sound palette kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, and this is where the emotional music goes from just background music to film music, is it marks the moments in the scenes where music enters, exits, and certain points where it seems to hit. A hit point just being something happens on screen and the music changes with that.
Yeah.
All right. So this is where the music goes from just background enhancing emotions to actually partnering with the film, the video game, the TV screen, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So once you've got your emotions figured out and you've found appropriate moments for it to enter, for it to exit, for it to kind of like hit certain cool things happening in the scene, you're good. The third function is how you take it to an art form.
Yeah.
And that is called the technical function. And that is what Howard Shore has mastered with this film. It's the use of themes and soundtracks and motifs to track the development of the story. It's where you go from beyond just trying to match what's happening in one scene by a scene-by-scene cases, case and basis put together.
Yep.
A scene-by-scene cases. Our ADHDs are...
Our brains are moving too fast.
So ADHD is hitting hard today.
I'm going to keep like a running tally of all the words we create in this hour.
That's what is it? Hoblet. So,
Hoblet
cases. All right. But yeah, so honestly, I'm going to stick to it. I'm going to commit. Scene-by-scene cases.
Yep.
You move beyond that and you start uniting certain scenes. You start reusing a certain melodic idea to track the growth of a character. You use a motif to track the journey and their progress towards the end goal of the journey.
Right.
Or another kind of goal that you can use for motifs is to track the theme of the story. Like we talked in the last episode of Howard Shore's weakness and redemption motif. and how that can be used to say the idea of people rising from their weakness and redeeming themselves is a very important theme within these three movies and the books. And so Howard Shore wrote a motif, a simple four-note rising action, that could be played in the background every time we saw that being exemplified.
Mm-hmm.
All of that tangent just came from the fact that you pointed out that the music tracks Sam's perspective of how the fight is going. Exactly. I love that. All right, yeah. Awesome.
There you go.
Thank you. Anything else you'd like to add?
No. I've said my piece.
All right, excellent. So the next one is your scene.
The Ride of the Rohirrim.
The Pelennor Fields. All right, yep. This is one of my favorite scenes. Let's watch it.
My favorite scene.
Oh, wait. Before we watch it, mm-hmm. For those who are just listening.
Watch the movie. Watch the movie.
They've probably, but still, describe what happens. It's a fair point.
I wasn't saying that in lieu of me explaining it. Yeah. I was just saying watch the movie.
Watch the movie, Of course.
For this scene alone. Ride of the Rohirrim is essentially, this is sort of like an all hope has sort of like lost moment during the Battle of Minas Tirith. So and I'll do my best to explain it, because like I just sometimes I'm not the best when I'm explaining things.
No worries.
But in terms of this one, so essentially the orcs are like, you know, they're sieging Minas Tirith. They're basically closing in on their victory to destroy the world of man, and the Kingdom of Theoden, right? The Kingdom of Rohan. They show up with their riders, their famed riders of Theoden.
Their cavalry.
The cavalry units, yes. So they'll come in and, you know, basically have this massive swarm, super epic, super inspirational speech, and then they just get them from this. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's wonderful.
Yeah, watch the movie.
Yes,
if you haven't watched the movie, watch the movie. You deserve it.
You should watch every movie that we do a podcast episode about.
Yes, but specifically this one.
Yes, very much. I agree.
This one is next level. If you don't watch the movie, at least look up the scene on YouTube. The
Riders Theoden's speech.
Yeah, King Theoden's speech or the Ride of the Rohirrim.
Yep, amazing. Mm-hmm. All right, let's watch it now.
All right,
let's do it.
Ride to ruin!
I love that scene.
That is hands down one of my favorite movie scenes ever.
I want to go to the gym now.
I know, right?
You just get pumped up.
It's so inspirational.
Oh, because every once in a while when I'm like in the gym and I'm not feeling it, mm-hmm. I'll just like start off on like an elliptical or something for a warm up, and I'll watch this scene.
Yeah.
And without fail, it's like, yeah, every time. Let's do it. All right. Mm-hmm. There's just so much to unpack in this scene, but I'm going to defer to you first. This is your scene.
Yeah. No, I don't have anything. I just wanted to watch it. No, that was it.
All right.
That was all we're doing.
All right. Fair enough.
No, I'm just kidding.
I would find that acceptable.
No, I'm just kidding. Right. I got some things for you. So something I forgot to mention too, I think, before we watched it, is that this is actually a Hail Mary.
Yep.
So this is what we would call a last ditch effort.
Mm-hmm.
So it's grim. Like, actually, the outlook on this war is that they have no chance.
Oh, definitely.
At this point. So we need something huge in order to turn the tide of the war. The music needed to reflect that.
Yep.
So as you heard, it reflected that and then some, right?
Yeah.
You know, it matched Theoden's speech. It matched everything, you know, like just the bigness. There was, you know, it was kind of taking place in like a gigantic field. You know, I always talk about like fill the space. This jammed that space full of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You felt claustrophobic because of how much there was there, even in such a big space.
Yep.
A good claustrophobic. But, you know, in terms of like you felt it was almost like a safety that, you know, it was kind of like pushing forward, even though they knew they were all probably going to die.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this was their last stand. So, you know, they needed to. The music needed to have the weight of the sacrifice of the self, of the sacrifice of their cause, right?
Mm-hmm.
The sacrifice of the self for their cause. Every single person in Theoden's army was willing to die for that cause. So, like, that's heavy. Like, that's heavy, yes. And then some. So, you know, you gotta reflect it, you know? And I'll do a little bit of your job here and this, you know, describe the sound palette. The sound palette was, you know, it was, I mean, everything in Lord of the Rings is orchestral, but, well, most of it. And, you know, my big favorite thing for epic, you know, battle music is kind of like that bass drum, sort of like that beat. And you can kind of hear it.
The pulse.
Yeah, the pulse. Exactly. You can kind of hear it speeding up and speeding up and speeding up. And if you were to relate that to like, you know, like what emotion that you're going to have,
oh, very,
you know,
much.
You're going to in those situations for courage, like your heartbeat.
Oh, definitely.
At a very basic level, like your heartbeat gets going. So, you know, like you said, you're talking about the gym, like what do you need in order to get that moving? You need to get your heartbeat moving.
Yeah.
So like, that's a really good thing to build around is sort of like the heartbeat.
Oh, entirely.
Yeah. So there's a lot of that. There's a lot riding on this effort. What was the other thing that I wrote here? Oh, yeah. So when it transitions, when they actually start the ride, you hear the music transition from sort of, I don't know, what was that? What's that theme? The da, 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 da. What did Howard Shore say that was specifically for?
That is, I believe that's nature's reclamation. Mm-hmm. So we have it's either the Rohan theme or the Nature's Reclamation theme.
Yeah.
But Nature's Reclamation theme. So actually, let me explain what happens.
Yeah, I'm talking not the Rohan theme, yeah. The other one.
Then that's Nature's Reclamation.
Okay.
And that Nature's Reclamation is basically the anti-Ring of Power theme.
Okay.
So everything the ring promises, its carriers, everything it promises to offer but can't, that's what Nature's Reclamation stands for. Everything good, okay. Everything virtuous, everything, the fight against evil.
Mm-hmm.
And here, the idea of nature's reclamation. The riders of Rohan have become a force of nature.
Yep.
To be reckoned with.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
It is.
Yeah, I've got more to say, but I want to hear what you have to say. Can you give me some good ideas?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, so all that to say, you know, we kind of transitioned from that we've heard previously in the trilogy, you know, a whole ton in different situations. You know, as, you know, kind of the forces of nature and the ring sort of go back and forth, we transition into the riders we transition into the Rohan theme, that da 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 da. And like, I remember when I first watched this, I was living in the Middle East. I was living in Jordan and it was on my phone. The screen was like this big.
Yeah.
I watched all three of them in a weekend, and they weren't the extended editions like these ones, but they were, you know, still cool, still worth it. But even that, you know, like just that transition, even like with that little, you know, kind of screen, you know, sort of setup, it was so immensely emotional.
Oh yeah.
And so and the reason is because this is, like I said, it's the kingdom of Rohan sacrificing themselves. Yeah. Like, this is their stand.
Fight or flee, they are going to die, so they're going to die fighting.
Yeah, they're
going to
die fighting. And that's a little bit of what we talk about, like, sort of that bad guy fear that I mentioned, you know, in a previous episode.
That was the Avengers episode.
Yeah, yeah. So the bad guy fear, like, this is a really good example of bad guy fear.
Oh, yeah.
Is where you're like, okay, you know, we might be dying, but, like, you're coming with me kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yeah, that was fun.
Oh, it's amazing. And that's fun, exactly fun what I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to talk about because, I mean, you brought up the energy and that pulse. And that is huge because I've talked about this at length in previous episodes, so I won't go too deep in here, but the three mm-hmm. elements of emotion in music, the reason why music can be emotional is because it can emulate three pillars of the emotional experience. It can determine, it can emulate the valence, which is how dark or bright an emotion is. Mm-hmm. It can emulate size, which is how overwhelming an emotion is. And it can emulate energy and movement, which is how invigorating or draining mm-hmm. emotion is, or how invigorating or draining the expression of an emotion is.
Yeah.
And specifically the rhythm and like fast energy, that is one of the most powerful elements of emotion. It's actually why angry orchestral music is so difficult.
Yep.
Because several studies done on young children, like who were old enough to communicate a little bit, but young enough that they had not been exposed to a significant amount of music,
mm-hmm.
the overriding, like the overwhelming common denominator determines whether they thought a piece of music was happy or sad was energy. Mm-hmm. You could have super sad lyrics. You could have dark harmony, dark instrumentation. But if it was a fast-paced rhythm, you could have screamo metal and the kids would be going, oh, this is happy music.
Yep.
Because it's got high energy. And what we saw is it's highly correlated with our physical expressions of mm-hmm. emotion. When we're happy, we dance. We jump up. We get excited. If you're weird, like you rub your hands together, whatever your expression is. Mm-hmm. Like, I rub my hands together a lot.
Yep.
My sister said she could always tell when I was about to have something tasty when we were younger. I'd rub my hands together.
Your hands together.
But it was weird. Like, yeah. But anyways, like I still do that. Like in the movie theater, when a new movie's like, I rub my hands together. I don't know why. Yep. I just do it.
That's what we do.
Yep. And so, but it's high energy because you've got so much energy. You want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to go deep into that for now, but because we've explained, I've explained the three pillars of emotions. I've explained how to do it. If people want to learn a lot, I have an ebook that you can buy, tabletopcomposer.com. Go to the bookstore tab. I have a book called Portraying Emotions with Music. Mm-hmm. All right. It's designed to be a 6-week course you can take yourself through. Teaches you everything about how music portrays emotions, how you can control emotions with your music, as well as other things like how do you transition from one emotion to another? Mm-hmm. How do you add more details? How do you write music that falls into the background and creates subtle emotions? All kinds of cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And it'll explain things like why angry music is so difficult without lyrics and how you can overcome that.
Mm-hmm.
So there are resources out there, all right? But what I want to focus on right now is part something that I mentioned in that book, which is the role of motivation.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The role of a person's motivation behind their actions takes such a tremendous impact on the emotional experience. So there's actually a wonderful quote from Howard Shore that I want to read now, where he talks about what he wanted to accomplish with this scene.
Mm-hmm.
He says, when they finally see the city, being the Riders of Rohirrim,
it's
in ruins. It's burning with thousands of orcs outside. The music plays to the devastation of it, but then slowly it builds up the will to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So they show up there. There's an army that vastly outnumbers them. The city has already fallen. The orcs are in the city. So it's almost like, all right, well, we're too late. Can we even do anything at this point?
Yeah.
And it's that idea that they're going to die anyway.
Mm-hmm.
If they turn back and flee, the orcs already overcame the greatest city that mm-hmm. there is. They broke past their walls. There's nothing they can do. If they go back home, they're just waiting to die anyways.
Yep.
So they might as well take them down with them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so we have a lot of really cool things that happen. This first time, when we show up, the French horns play the Rohan theme, the Riders of Rohan theme. All right, just a quick motif. Then as the camera pans out and we see all of the orcs, we hear Evil Times after seeing the army. Now, this is a really cool thing. So Evil Times is played, but it's played much more noble variation. So Evil Times, you'd think, oh, that's a theme for like the bad guys.
Yeah.
But it's not. The Evil Times is a theme that's focused more on what people choose to do while living in evil times. And the evil times theme is used anytime people push back against the influence of the ring. They push back against the forces of Mordor. Anytime they're willing to stand up for the good things, evil times is the theme that plays.
Yeah.
And so we hear that, and it has a much more noble air to it this time. And as the charge begins, we hear Nature's Reclamation. Remember, Nature's Reclamation is like the anti-ring theme. Nature's Reclamation is a theme that Howard Shore used to portray all the good things in life. The things that the ring wants to destroy, the things that the ring falsely offers to try and seduce its bearers, its users, the things that Sauron tries to pretend that he can offer you, but he can't. It's everything good and virtuous about life. And that's what we hear as these riders charge in. And that's why motivation is important. There are so many emotions in this scene. There is fear. There is dread. There is sadness. There's the loss of hope. But the motivation of them is, yeah, I'm going to die either way. I'm going to die fighting. And so they charge in. Mm-hmm. And the fight ends up being able to be turned around. So it's not done in vain.
Yep.
But when I say that motivation impacts the emotions of a scene, that is obviously a big one. But you can have, like, someone who's, like, the reason why they're doing something. Actually, let's go back to an example that we had from Avengers Endgame episode about that music, that beautiful, beautiful music that Alan Silvestri wrote for when Thanos kills his daughter.
Yep.
Such a tragic scene. A character we've known for movies that we've come to know and love is murdered so blatantly and so coldly. Yeah. And her death helps the villain get one step closer. But he genuinely loved her. That was his daughter. So there's a whole bunch of tragic that could go on. But it sounds triumphant when he does that. And it's because of his motivation. Is what he experiencing tragic? Yes, Thanos is heartbroken. And we see that he's heartbroken throughout the rest of the movie. But for him, that was an obstacle that he overcame. He says, I've denied my destiny once. I can't do it again, not even for you.
Yep.
And so there was that moment of that motivation, his reason for doing that. And did he accomplish what he set out to do? And because of that, there's that sense of honor, this sense of victory, of noble heroism. Because Thanos is the protagonist of that movie. He's the protagonist of that movie.
The Avengers were the sidecast.
Exactly, right?
Yep.
Which is crazy. You don't realize it until the movie's over. You're like, wow, yeah, he actually was the protagonist.
Well, and that was part of the trope.
Right?
In the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
That was part of the trope, so...
And so how can you actually apply this into your own scene? So as you're filming, as you're doing a film, and you're exploring the emotions of a scene. I am very fond of saying dive deeper. I've said that so many times in this first season of the podcast. And one of the ways that you can dive deeper is think about what are the character motivations, all right? You've got the emotions of the scene, but how can you color those emotions to make it even better, to make it more nuanced, more beautiful? And you ask yourself, what is the motivation? What do the characters want? Here, the characters want to stop Mordor. They know they're going to die, so there's a sense of tragedy in there, but they want to stop something evil. And so there's the act of heroism, the music of heroism. But Thanos, he was grief-stricken. He had to kill his daughter, whom he loved. Or it was a weird love, but he loved her.
Yeah.
But his motivation was, in his mind, to save the universe. In his mind, there was only one way to save the universe because it was overpopulated. There weren't enough resources or whatever. Take it for what you will. But there are some holes in the logic. But he thought, I'm going to kill half the population. I'm going to wipe them out. Do it mercifully with a snap of my fingers.
It made sense at one point.
Yeah. And we'll be good.
Yeah.
And the survivors will be able to flourish and have good lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him, it was a heavy price, but what he did was heroic. All right. So if you want to look through, what are the emotions that the characters are experiencing? What emotions do you want your audience to experience? But what was the goal of the characters? Did they accomplish that goal? Did they fail that goal? That's another thing. That's the opposite. When a character does something heroic, but it can be tinged with something sad because they had to give up their goal.
Yeah.
They had to give something up to do something heroic.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of things you can do. That's how you can find the different like dualities of different emotions, kind of different multiple layers. It's a beautiful thing. So yeah, I would just I would say when you're exploring the emotions of a scene, identify those emotions and then explore the motivations and the goals and the perceptions of the characters. Yep. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that you can go into. I have a, in my book, I talk about, you can talk about the character's motivation. Mm-hmm. You can talk about the character's perceived role of influence, whether they believe they had a big impact on it. So like Spider-Man is a huge example of someone who his experience of his uncle's loss is made that more tragic by the belief that he could have stopped it.
Yeah.
and the knowledge that, yeah, he probably could have. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of things that you can look for, all kinds of details that color in an emotional experience.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's that one just stuck out to me here. This scene is being super important, is make sure you understand the motivations of the characters. Why are they making these decisions? And how does that color the emotion?
Right. The why and the details and all of those things actually prop the emotion up. We see and experience the emotion. It's sort of like when you have a nice big bite of a piece of pizza that's just so beautiful. Yes. We get one experience that's held up by a million different things, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe we're treating ourselves out with let's start with the most basic piece. If you're into like pepperoni pizza, sure.
Yep.
You know, like the most basic here in the States.
Taste, surroundings. Are you in a good restaurant?
Exactly.
Is there a game on?
Yeah.
Are you in a grungy restaurant? Has it been a very bad day? Your feet hurt and now you're just looking for some sort.
Is the pepperoni, and even at a more basic level, is the pepperoni and the cheese just hitting that? You know, is it just combined in such a way that just works for you?
Exactly.
You know?
Colored by so many different things.
Yeah, every little thing.
And it's because one of the things that we've talked about in the past is the idea that emotions are our way of understanding the things we experience in the world. Mm-hmm. It's like our emotions are a way of understanding the world around us.
Yep.
And so if our emotions are the way of understanding, we have to think about what is going into that understanding. What are the senses? What are we experiencing? What is the context? All of those things impact the emotional experience.
Yep.
So I believe that you were the one who shared this model, the idea that we experience so many different things.
Oh, yeah.
Then we have an emotional response to those things.
Mm-hmm.
And then because of that emotional response, we make meaning of it.
Yep. That was the Interstellar episode.
Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. It was.
Yep.
Right? And so we have... Look at us remembering our own episodes.
I know. We're like, right? Now we're like dialed in. I told you, if you stay with us.
Yeah, look at Hobbits, Cases. It
started with Hobbits and Cases.
And now we're
in space.
Yes. But anyway, the other thing is that, so if you want to get really good at understanding the emotions of a scene, you have to learn how to understand what to look for.
Yeah.
And how to collect all of the different experiences, all the contexts, everything that colors that emotional experience. Because it's, again, our emotions are a way of making sense of the world around us. So one of the best ways to understand those emotions is to start by what is it trying to understand?
Right.
Right? All right. We should probably move on.
Yeah, we can.
All right. Excellent. So my next scene is Sam carries Frodo.
Really? We share that scene.
We do? Oh, that's yours then. I wrote down both of our scenes.
No, let's do it.
All right. No, we're doing it anyway. I just thought it was mine, not yours.
Okay, I see.
Yep. So Battle of Pelennor Fields, Sam carries Frodo. We want to go Sam carries Frodo?
Yeah, we could do Sam carries Frodo.
Let's do it. All right, so.
You want it to be mine or do you want to share it?
It doesn't matter. We've got all six.
All
right. So here's where the confusion comes in. I wrote down all of my themes and then I went scenes and I went through and I did like the musical analysis of them. And then I wrote down your scenes and did the musical analysis of those. And I put them all in the same document that I'm looking at right now.
Nice.
But I did not make notes of who's who.
Of whose was whose.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Cool. So Sam carries Frodo.
Excellent. Sam carries photos. Would you like to tell everybody what happens in this scene?
Yes. So this is, I don't remember chronologically how far away it is from the Battle of Pelennor Fields, but essentially what happens here is this whole trilogy, obviously, you know, if you haven't seen the movie, or a reminder if you have, Sam and Frodo are on the way. They're the two protagonists. Like, there's a lot of protagonists, but they're like the two kind of, main protagonists of the whole story, bringing the ring to get it, to destroy it at Mount Doom so that man and the hobbits can live and the rest of, and the orcs and, evil can go away. So it's a very treacherous journey. Mm-hmm. So, and at this point, this is the third movie. This is the second half of the third movie. We're like 11 hours in.
Mm-hmm.
So, at this point, when they, they're going through everything, they're out of food, they're out of water, they've been deceived over and over again by Gollum, on the way here. And, at this point, they've recognized that. So all of this emotionally, heavy stuff has happened to them. They essentially, I think just before this scene, actually, if I'm not mistaken, they come to the realization that they will probably not go back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're probably going to die, on this mission. So again, sort of similar to the, to the Riders of the Rohirrim, is this is like, this is it. Like, we're kind of here. We're putting our last efforts forth. And Frodo is the ring carrier. He's mm-hmm. the person carrying the ring. It bears a heavy weight on him. He can't do it. You know, he emotionally, physically taxes him to the point to where he can't move. Mm-hmm. And so Sam, in all of his goated glory, mm-hmm. you know.
Best boy.
Yep, the best boy, the better boy. The best boy of the whole trilogy, decides to carry Frodo mm-hmm. the rest of the journey.
Yep.
And it sounds that simple, and it is. And yep. It's
very emotional.
It's way more emotional than I described it. So,
all right, let's watch it. Yep.
Do you remember the Shire, Mr. Frodo? It'll be spring soon. The orchards will be in blossom, and the birds will be nesting in the hazel thicket. And they'll be sowing the summer barley in the lower fields. And eating the first of the strawberries with cream. Do you remember the taste of strawberries?
No, Sam. I can't recall the taste of food. Nor the sound of water. A touch of grass. I'm naked in the dark. There's nothing, no veil between me and the wheel of fire. I can see him with my waking eyes.
Then let us be rid of it. Once and for all. Come on, Mr. Frodo. I can't carry it for you. But I can carry you. Come on!
Man,
I say it after every scene, but I really do. I really do love this scene.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, it's just
another emotional one.
Yes, yeah. It pulls you in. Howard Shore, man, the man's music is incredible.
Yeah,
I actually don't have a lot to say about this scene. Is it mine or yours?
I wrote one down, so it's
mine. Let me hear yours.
Yep. Well, you know, so this one was fascinating from when we started. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, you know, leading up to this point, like I had said, this is sort of like an all is lost moment.
Yeah.
Like we've got a lot of those
in this movie.
Yeah. We've got this one thing that we need to do and we can barely do it, but we're going to do it. We're going to find a way. So you hear, you know, a lot, you know, leading up to before Frodo starts to kind of, you know, get like freaking out a little bit. He kind of starts tripping a little. He, you know, there's, you know, some sadness, there's some somber kind of like, yeah, this is sort of like, that's kind of like a meaning, like there's some meaning made there, if that makes sense. So like there's meaning in terms of like, that's when we're realizing like, this is like futile probably. So, you know, we have that, and then we kind of hear a little bit of the Shire theme, you know, just to kind of, cause Sam's trying to, you know, do his job as the better boy and keep Frodo moving, and it doesn't work.
No, they're both kind of mourning over their loss.
Yeah. They're both mourning over their loss. It doesn't work for Frodo, and Frodo kind of falls deeper into that fear. He falls deeper into that just sense of dread and like horror of the fact that he's not shielded from Sauron any longer.
Nope.
You know, he's got one thin layer, and that's, you know, we didn't really explain it, but you know, that's when they're, the rest of the Riders of Theoden and Aragorn and the Fellowship are all basically distracting the orcs so that they don't rush to the mountain to try to save the ring. So that's like it.
Mm-hmm.
And even that effort is like futile. Like it's not going to work, you know, I mean, in their perception, it's not going to work. So we've got all that setting this up. And then we get to this point where Frodo is, you know, kind of Frodo's actually like losing his mind. He's starting to lose his, like, he's actually kind of like lost his mind. Starts getting really scared, starts freaking out. The music and the sound reflects that. And what have I always said in the past about things like this, where we've got one big immovable object of fear, we need to move it with a bigger object. Mm-hmm. We need to...
You've always said that?
I have always said that, yeah.
Many times.
Many times. Yep. This is not the first time I've said that.
Not the first time I've ever heard you say that.
No, I've said things similar. I've never said those exact words. But It's all right. Just trust me. This is inspirational.
Me inspired.
Yep, that's right. So what we need to do in these situations is we have this giant thing that needs to be moved, that fear. Sam's the only one who can do it.
Yeah.
Not Frodo.
Obviously.
Not Frodo.
No.
Sam. But, Sam is the only one that can do it. So he inspires Frodo. He inspires, you know, the audience as well by deciding to carry Frodo's weight and Frodo, which is kind of cool. So he picks
Frodo's weight and Frodo.
That's right. Like the weight of like...
Oh, the ring.
The ring.
The weight that Frodo carries.
Yeah. So not only his physical weight, but his emotional weight.
There you go. The baggage.
There you go. Yeah. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Poetic. But
inspiring.
So all that to kind of say, I've laid this whole picture out to say, like, that's a big event.
It is.
That's a
massive.
Big thing. The music needs to reflect that.
Which it does.
And it does.
Like I told you, those three pillars.
Yep.
One of them is size.
It follows them very well. It follows the size pillar very well. And yeah, it's emotional. It's beautiful because it also shows the dedication that Sam has to Frodo and to the cause.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, that's why we always will kind of say Sam is like the better boy because he is the person who he knows the mission and he doesn't ever stray.
Yeah.
He sticks with it.
And there's a specific reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's because Sam's character, more so than any other character, adheres to one of the chief virtues that J.R.R. Tolkien wanted to capture in his book, which is the unshakable power of like belief and faith and the idea that you know, no matter how bad things are, that something better is around the corner.
Yeah.
That good things are still coming. And because you know that there are still good things to come, you don't give up on being a good person. You don't give up on having hope, on being supportive, on pushing forward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such an important idea that obviously our boy, Howie Shore, he's got a theme for it because he's got 90 themes. I don't know why I call him Howie,
yep.
But your Howard buddies, Shore.
Your friends, yep. Your composer friends.
I call him Howie, yep. Not to his face.
Not to his face, yep.
Yep. but Grey Havens is what it's called. And it's a theme that's introduced in this movie. So it's the first time we hear it is in this movie early on. It gets introduced and it is a theme that is based on the belief that good is yet to come. And so which character does this theme get used with the most? Because it is a theme, which I've got to find a better way of saying that.
A theme.
But the idea that a theme is a theme that's used to portray a literary theme or like a moral to the story kind of thing.
Yeah.
And one of the moral of the stories is like no matter how dark things get, you don't give up hope and the belief that something better is around the corner, something good is coming.
Yep.
And Sam is the one who embodies that belief the most. That even right here on the crack of Mount Doom, they're like this close to dying. The rocks are steaming, so I can't imagine that it's you're smoking, so I can't imagine a very comfortable area.
Yeah.
And even that, he's sitting down and talking about strawberries and cream.
Yep.
He's talking about the Shire, he's talking about home, and he's reminding Frodo why they're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they can't do it, the Shire won't last. It's so far away that, it might have a little while left. But eventually, the forces of Mordor, they're not going to stop. They're going to go after it.
Right.
That doesn't help Frodo, but Sam keeps going. And it's just, there's so much so much to unpack here. I don't know what else to say.
Heavy.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if I had to have a takeaway, I'm just going to go back with the... go back to that first one that we're talking about the idea... of I forgot it. Give me a second.
Yep.
Give me a second.
Take your time.
Grey Havens. Oh yeah, the idea of the themes don't have to be just character themes.
Right.
Talking about there are three very fundamental types of themes a composer could use. You can use character themes, which track the development of the character. It tracks how they change.
Mm-hmm.
You have a journey or goal theme, which tracks the character's progress that brings them closer or farther away.
Yeah.
So the theme gets used every time they make a decision or do something that brings them closer to it or takes it farther away from it. And then there are basically the literary themes.
Mm-hmm.
Need to come up with a better name for that. But the theme themes. The theme themes are used to track stuff like this, where it tracks, where it's not tied to any one character, not tied to any one goal, but it's tied to this idea, this virtue that the author or storyteller wants to share.
Right.
Kind of bring home. So wonderful, beautiful scene. Mm-hmm. Anything else to say?
No.
Excellent.
I think we're good on that one.
This one, next one, is very similar, and it is my scene for Frodo.
Mm-hmm.
All right, for Frodo is one of mine, as I just said.
Yep.
I'm sorry, my mind's all over the place. I don't know why. ADHD. Okay, so for Frodo, this is the scene where the forces of Mordor, like you said, Aragorn and the Fellowship. Aragorn is now the king of Gondor. He took his spot. He won the loyalty by being the hero of the last battle.
Mm-hmm.
So Rohan and the forces of Gondor have come together behind him. And they're all like, all right, yeah, we won that battle, but the bad guy's still over there. So what we're going to do, instead of waiting for him to come back, we're going to launch the fight against him. Because they don't even know if Frodo's alive.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even know if Frodo's alive. They don't even know if there is any hope. Even Gandalf, Mr. And so hope is rekindled himself, has given up hope. Like, after the last battle, he says, there's no hope. Right. Frodo's dead. There's no way he made it back. It's my fault. I sent him that way.
Yep.
And they're like, well, we don't know if they're dead. They're probably dead, but we don't know.
Yep.
And so if they're alive, they're probably in Mordor right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably close to the volcano. If they get caught, all hope is lost. So the only thing we can do is throw wave after wave of men against the wall,
yep,
fight him, and keep his focus on the battle.
Mm-hmm.
Because Sauron views Aragorn as a threat. He is the rightful king, and he's the only one who can help unify the free kingdoms against Sauron. So mm-hmm. Sauron sees him as a threat. So when he shows up with his army, Sauron is fixated on that. He doesn't even realize that the hobbits are in Mordor. Now, before this fight, as the gates open and they get surrounded and realize, oh, we never had a chance. Our army is way too small compared to this army. We literally just got surrounded. We're completely surrounded on all sides. There's nothing we can do here except for fight.
Yep.
Before that happened, the Mouth of Sauron, which is the name of like the guy who came out to talk on behalf of Sauron and mm-hmm. like meet with him as like the kingdoms do or whatever before battle.
Yeah.
Basically gave them proof that he'd killed Frodo.
Because
mm-hmm. after Frodo had been captured by Shelob and the orcs on him, there's a whole big to-do. Basically, he tosses the chain mail that Frodo had been wearing. Yeah, Aragorn. It's like, oh yeah, we caught him. He's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as far as they know, Frodo's dead.
Yep.
Sauron has the ring. And they're doomed. There is nothing they can do. They're all about to die, and it's for nothing. There is no heroic nature to their death anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So Sauron just took away what they had in the previous battle. Now, if they know they're going to die, they realize, like, well, even if we die, there is zero good that can come from this. Hope is lost. And then Aragorn just turns around and he's like, you know what? For Frodo.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to do this because he killed our heroic friend who died doing what he thought he could, well, only he could do.
Mm-hmm.
Dying because he took on a burden that none of us could take. He's like, so if we're going to die, we're going to at least avenge him. And so that's when that fight, that idea is like, yeah, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
They're rebuilt up. They're like, yeah, let's do it.
Yep.
Let's kill some orcs.
Yep.
And then they ride in the battle, and it's a lot of fun.
They said those exact words.
I like to think someone did.
Yep.
That's what I would be doing. I'd be sitting there going like, yeah.
Let's kill some orcs. Come on.
Yep. I got the bloodlust.
That's right.
All right. So let's watch this.
All right. For Frodo.
Such a good scene.
All right,
Something I forgot to mention is the very beginning of it. It's a short scene, but the very beginning, before the charge, before the for Frodo thing,
mm-hmm.
there is a moment where Sauron tries to rub it in. And he tries to basically tempt and convert Aragorn. He speaks in his mind and tries to seduce him with the power of the ring the way he did his ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, But right before he's about to wipe out the last free armies, he's like, all right, yeah, I am him. All right. Yeah. Not only am I about to wipe all of you out, but I'm going to make you watch me corrupt your king in front of you. So not only am I going to wipe you out, but I'm going to show you that you never had it. It's basically like add insult to injury.
Yeah.
And he fails. Aragorn refuses to be corrupted by Sauron.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the whole significance of the turning back and for Frodo. Where yeah. everyone's like, oh, no. Oh, no. Here we go. Sauron's going to take Aragorn. And then Aragorn's like, for Frodo, let's do this. Yep. And they charge off and they fight. It's beautiful.
It is.
So the notes that I have, again, my trouble with this movie is I enjoy it too much to kind of,
mm-hmm.
I watch and I enjoy it and then I forget to analyze yep. it. The idea behind this one is we hear a massive statement of the Fellowship. Now, remember what I said earlier, the Fellowship theme is not a character theme. It's an ideal, a journey theme. The Fellowship was designed to help fight to get Frodo to Mount Doom so he could destroy the ring.
Mm-hmm.
So it's associated with heroism. It's associated with like self-sacrifice. It's associated with a whole bunch of ideas that over three movies, we have heard this theme get used so many times. And it would be so easy to just add any kind of heroic kind of theme here.
Mm.
But the Fellowship works because, again, of a crucial idea we mentioned earlier and one that we taught in our very first episode, the Harry Potter episode.
Yep.
The idea that you need to play to the emotions of your audience. The characters think Frodo's dead. So in the character's mind, this is a last-ditch effort. We're all going to die anyway. We might as well die standing. All mm-hmm. right? Might as well die swinging. But the audience knows, no, 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 no. This is what you need to do. You have to fight because the ring is still in play.
Yep.
Frodo can still do this. The Fellowship can still live up to their responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a way that you're tracking the story, not as the characters see it. Because in the characters, the story's over.
Right.
All
right.
They're all about to die. They failed. There's no more hope. So they're just going to go out swinging.
Mm-hmm.
The audience knows that the story is still going. And so the music plays to what the audience knows. And we hear the Fellowship theme again.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the largest statement of the Fellowship theme that we hear in this movie.
Yep.
Big brass, the choir gets involved. Percussion that you were talking about with mm-hmm. energy. It's a big finale type music.
Yep.
And yeah, that's it. I'm done.
Nice. Good stuff.
Yep. Anticlimactic. That was the finale. That was yep. the finale of my statements.
Honestly, well, I've always felt about this movie. Like, this was a powerful scene and all of this was really, like, heavy. But
of course.
I feel like after the Ride of the Rohirrim, it was kind of like, yeah, nothing's going to, like, match up to that.
No. You know? I wouldn't agree with that.
No. I mean, battle-wise. Like,
true,
that
battle-wise.
Was,
yep.
That, to me, felt like a way heavier battle than this was.
I would agree.
Yeah.
But I think the issue is because the battle, the Ride of Rohirrim, we have a nice long scene where we get to sit in it.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is the finale. We're chopping all over the place. So I think the reason why I don't have a lot to say about this is, like, what, a 15-second clip?
Yeah.
It's because if we should really, I should have really just analyzed it as a full chunk. Because
mm-hmm.
after this, we see Frodo and Sam arrive, and I wish we could see this. Because then Gollum shows up mm-hmm. one last time and attacks them to try to take the ring one last time, and then Sam just lets loose.
Yep.
Sam just starts while he's throwing hands. Mm-hmm. Right? And so I love
He's been waiting.
That. He's been waiting. He's been waiting to just throw down with Gollum, and he finally gets to just go one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
Run the ones on him.
That's right.
But, nah. So, yeah, there's so much I could say. But no, yeah, there's only so much I can say with a 15-second clip, and mm-hmm. I'm just geeking out about this movie right now.
Yep.
But I don't know. We're spending more time explaining why we can't say stuff than we actually did
say
stuff. So do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, nothing that hasn't already been said. No, super powerful scene, you know.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I love this. Mm-hmm. All right, so we've only got two more. I feel like we are not spending equal amounts of time on these scenes.
We clearly are biased towards this particular scenes, aren't
oh,
we?
Oh, no. No.
No.
No.
Given everybody, or every scene that's comeuppance.
Yep. Of course.
Yeah. Definitely
Sauron,
not biased.
Defeated. That's the next scene.
Yep.
Is this one mine or yours?
That's yours.
Is mine? All right. So that explains why I have a lot more notes on this one.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't make sense because For Frodo was also my scene.
I was going to say, I didn't have For Frodo.
All right. So Sauron defeated. All right. So we're about to watch. So basically, the hobbits make it to Mount Dune. Gollum shows up and tries taking the ring one last time. Sam and Gollum fight. Gollum sneaks Sam, hits him in the back of the head with a rock. Sam goes down, and then Gollum follows Frodo. Frodo finally gets seduced by the ring. Mm-hmm. Where just at the moment of Mount Doom, after three movies of the ring constantly battering on his mental defenses, Frodo finally just loses it. The ring overpowers him, seduces him, and now Frodo decides, I'm going to keep the ring. Mm-hmm. And so then Frodo runs away as Sam's telling him to hide it. That's when, so Sam's there telling him to destroy it, and then Sam has the heartbreaking realization of, we failed, because Frodo, the ring finally took over Frodo. Right. And then just as he realized that, that's when Gollum steals him, just smacks him on the back of the head with a rock, goes down, and then Gollum looks for the footsteps. There's a bloody fight. Gollum bites off Frodo's finger, mm-hmm. takes the ring, and then Frodo pushes Gollum off the edge, and that's how the ring's finally destroyed. Yep. So we are going to watch Gollum fall into the lava. We're going to watch him burn, the ring sink, and then we're going to watch the ring get destroyed, and we're going to see the after effects. So this is a much longer scene. Mm-hmm. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Thank you.
gone. It's done.
Yes, Mr. Frodo. It's over now.
All right, I really, really, really want to keep going, but we'll stop there.
Yep.
I don't want YouTube to come after me. But the emotional just kind of ups and downs of that scene.
Right. There was a lot.
There's so much. So let's start off with Gollum. So first, Frodo and Gollum are fighting off the ring. So they both go over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Then Gollum falls and the ring lands in lava. So then Sam saves Frodo. And every time I see that, I get grossed out. Like, if I were Sam, I'm like, Frodo, give me your hand. And he touches it. Like, no, other hand.
Other hand, please.
Yeah. Anyways, Sam pulls him up, super heroic. And the ring gets destroyed. And then it goes back to the Fellowship of the armies of Rohan and Gondor.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a moment where we just expressed they had zero hope. They straight up believed Frodo was dead. All right. They thought Frodo was dead. Sauron has the ring. There is no hope. We're all going to die, but at least we're going to die fighting.
Right.
And then to see in the distance Sauron's tower start to crumble and see Sauron himself dying. Suddenly, not only do they realize Frodo's alive, but they realize Frodo and Sam did it. Mm-hmm. They destroyed the ring. The one thing no one thought was possible. That Gandalf himself, Mr. Hope is rekindled.
Right.
Hope is lost. Mm-hmm. Like, that guy, he's didn't think it was possible. And they're all sitting there going like, oh my word, we just did this.
It was possible.
We did it. Yeah. We did it. And they're all super excited. They're all cheering as the armies of Mordor flee because their master is gone. So all his power is collapsing. So the lands of Mordor are starting to collapse. And so they're like, oh, we're getting out of here. I'm going to dip. And what happens is just in the midst of that celebration of they did it, I can't believe they did it, boom, the volcano erupts, and there's that quick switch where they're like, Frodo's if Frodo destroyed gone. The ring, he's still in there, and Frodo's dead.
Yeah.
And there's that belief that, all right, within 5 seconds, I realize my friend is alive, he did the thing that we needed him to do that we didn't think he could actually do, and oh, he's dead again.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that kind of emotional switch, and then it goes back and we see Sam and Frodo running out. They're still alive, so we're relieved because at that point, if it's the first time you've seen it, the audience also doesn't know if they're alive.
Yeah.
Because we know they're in the volcano, so boom, there's that big shift, and there's that in the height of all this, yeah, we're like, did they just die?
Right.
But we've seen this, 17 times at this point? So
at least.
Anywho, let's talk a bit more about what the music is doing here.
Mm-hmm.
So the destruction of the ring is the final theme of the ring that we hear here. And the destruction of the ring is very cool. Mm-hmm. It is a very interesting approach to scoring a finale. Because usually the finale, you think you layer lots of themes together.
Yeah.
Howard Shore went one step further. Instead of merging, instead of playing multiple themes at the same time, contrapuntally, which is beautiful,
mm-hmm.
he took multiple themes and mushed them right into one brand new theme that sounds like a bunch of them. So okay. The Destruction of the Ring, let me read my notes here, is actually combines elements from four other themes.
Mm.
All right. So it combines the elements from the three ring themes we talked about last episode. The history of the ring, the seduction of the ring, and the evil of the ring. And then it combines a fourth theme, evil times.
Mm.
Which if you remember, I talked about just earlier, evil times is that theme that was associated with anytime someone pushes against evil. Anytime, yeah. Despite the fact that they're leaving in evil times, people try to pursue and continue doing good. And so what he does is he takes the pitch material, so like the notes and the basic shapes of the melodies, and he takes those from the evil of the ring, the seduction of the ring, and evil times. So he takes those notes and he creates a similar shape to those three. And then he adds more of the colors from the more choral piece, the seduction of the ring. And he combines all these elements to create something that when you hear it, you're like, oh, this sounds familiar, but I haven't heard it before.
Mm.
It sounds familiar because it sounds very similar in shape to those first three, the evil of the ring, evil times, and the seduction of the ring. And whatever, I'm getting lost in my own notes. But it sounds similar to those other themes, but it's something new. It's something bigger. It's something greater, something grander. And it's just, I haven't seen another film composer do that. Yeah. I've seen lots of people who do massive statements of a journey theme, people who've done massive statements of a character theme. I've seen people do amazing, masterful layering of multiple themes on top of each other. I've never seen a composer go, all right, bet, I'm going to just force four of my themes to mush together and create a brand new super theme, like the Megamorphin Power Rangers,
right,
or something. but all of that to do, The only way you could do that is through a knowledge of your themes and, of course, kind of music theory. So I don't know why I wrote down takeaway music theory is a good tool. That's not a useful note.
It tends to be.
It is. It is. I will say,
it's a good tool if you want to write music.
Right. Yes. Very much. I guess that's something I wish I'd taken more notes. But the idea is, like, if you follow me on the live streams, you'll know that I love geeking out about music theory. Mm-hmm. I do not believe music theory is a set of rules. I think it is just a language. Mm-hmm. And if the same way, if you study a language and understand the language more, you can write better poetry. I believe if you study music theory and learn more about music theory, you can create better music.
Yeah.
Not because it limits you, not because it creates a set of rules that you have to follow, but because it helps you understand how music works and mm-hmm. why it works. And so he was able to do reductions of these themes. He was able to reduce the things that we call approach tones for the melodies and find out the basic shape and pitch collections that were found at the core of these three themes. Yeah. I imagine he didn't reduce them. I imagine he already knew because he wrote them. But he was able to say, what are the basic elements of this one? What are the basic elements of these themes? And how do I find a way to combine all of them into a brand new theme that still sounds familiar? Mm-hmm. It's just, I'm geeking out and I'm also running out of steam. I don't know why. It's a long podcast.
I was going to say, this has been a long one.
Yeah, but it's such a good movie.
Yep.
Right. People, go watch it if you haven't. I can't imagine anyone who's listening to this has not seen it, but go watch it again.
If you haven't, please.
Watch
it
again.
Owe it to yourself.
The extended edition. I will say that. There are people who probably haven't seen the extended edition. Go watch the extended edition. Best 4 hours of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If you're going to watch The Return of the King, you should watch all three. We talk about this movie because we didn't do any of the first two, did we?
No, we didn't.
For the podcast, yeah. So this is actually a very unique trilogy in that, you know, and the music reflects that as well. Yeah. And that it was all made as it was all like recorded and like
as if it was going to be one mega movie,
one 12 plus hour movie. Yep. Yeah. And then they split it up into three. So really we're saying, so this is for people who haven't seen any of the Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. Really what we're saying is if you're going to watch Return of the King, you should watch the first two first.
Oh yeah. To get the amazing impact of the music.
Yeah. Cause it all builds from the very first
moment. There
are
so many things that happen throughout each of these. Mm-hmm. So for example, like the Fellowship theme goes to amazing transformations. The Shire theme is the most dramatic of transformations. It goes from the happy little Shire theme that everybody associates in the first movie to being just these grotesque mutilations of the theme in this third movie.
Yeah.
That show that the further they move away from home, the more that experience of home gets colored by their journeys. To the point where like one of the greatest uses of this was part one of this movie was when we heard the Shire theme return, and it was a very minor key, very butchered version, because Frodo was basically banishing Sam. Frodo believed the lies that Gollum was telling and told Sam go home. And so they had taken this thing with the home, getting back to the Shire has been their motivating their motivation to this entire thing. Let's do this, let's get take care of it so we can go home. And then the idea that in that moment, Sam was, he was getting what he wanted. He was going home, but it wasn't the way he wanted it.
Right.
All right. There's so much to unpack with this movie. It's almost overwhelming. Mm-hmm. It's amazing, though.
Yes, it is.
Anything else you'd like to say?
About this one? No.
All right.
No.
Let's get on to our very last scene.
The very last scene, not only of the movie, but of the season.
True. Mm-hmm. Yes, very last scene of the season, season one.
Is actually like randomly a really good movie to end the season with.
It was probably because it's the end of a trilogy.
The end of a really massive trilogy, and it's just, it feels like everything is culminated, and this is how it's gonna feel for my scene, is everything culminates into this scene.
Because it's gonna be the Fellowship reunited.
Yep.
The first time that these characters see each other all together since the first movie.
Since the Balrog, yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Ha ha ha! Now come the days of the king. May they be blessed.
Oh, I did not want to end it. I just wanted to keep going and going and going.
Yep, just until we finish the whole movie.
Pretty much.
You still got about 40 minutes left. In
the I know. You
know. Such a good movie.
You would think that that would be the end.
But it's not. There's so many storylines that need to have a proper ending to be tied up. It's just amazing.
It really is. So this scene, this scene really was showing after, Sam and Frodo got rescued by...
Gandalf.
By Gandalf and the Eagles, controversially. And they...
If you haven't read the books.
I was gonna say, only if you haven't read the books, and if you know. Yeah. But in terms of this, Frodo wakes up. Frodo wakes up in and he's recovering, still from the events that had transpired over the last three movies. Well, two and a half, because three. Yeah, three movies. It's been a minute. It's been a couple of movies. So he's waking up, he's seeing everybody for the first time. This is like we were saying, this is the first time that the Fellowship has come back together basically since the end of the first movie. So it's been a very long time since Frodo has seen anybody. And this is
the first time he's seen Gandalf. Last Frodo knew, Gandalf was dead.
Yeah. He thought Gandalf was straight up gone.
Yep. Yeah.
So, this is representative that, or the music represents a lot of things here, right? So like high levels of positivity, the story's over. This is the recovery scene for Frodo. This is his safe space. Not only is he physically in a safer space, he's no longer in a horrible, mountain with like basically the most evil being that's ever existed.
Constantly battering away at his mind.
Right. Yeah. Like he's mentally, physically safe. His relationship with the Fellowship is also safety. Mm. And that amount of safety increases as each character comes in. We see him recognizing Gandalf. It's nice. We see Merry and Pippin run and jump on the bed with him. It's even more nice. We see Gimli and then Legolas. And then we see Aragorn, everybody as everything gets, as everybody gets, comes into the scene.
It's closure that the Fellowship did their job.
They did their job and they're back together and they're good. They're good. What's interesting, what I really liked that I forgot to make a note about was when Sam came in, it kind of comes back a little bit.
Yep.
And I'm not going to go into a spiel about trauma bonding, but I'm going to, there's a little bit to say here about it, I think, because... Yeah. I mean, obviously, we understand relationships to it, at a basic level relation, we attach to people. That's a thing. Psychologically, we attach to people. That's why the safety net of the Fellowship was such a beautiful thing for Frodo, because, he had like a healthy attachment, he had a very safe attachment to them. The attachment to Sam has changed at this point. They now are kind of in a different camp of, relationship to one another. Because of what they went through. They've seen some things. So this is, so you hear stories of people who, not to get into it, but, trauma, going through trauma can actually enhance and kind of twist and not always in a negative way, but kind of twist and create a new type of bond.
Advice. If you got a dying relationship, trauma's not going to save it.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't take any of this as psychological advice ever.
No.
No, we are 100% for the movies.
On the movies. Yep.
Yep. Fake characters, sure, do whatever you want with them. But real people, don't do that. The idea behind it is that it's a stronger bond. It's a more felt bond. It's a more... it's a different bond.
Yeah.
Like, it's just different. It's not... and it has different tenets to it. So... the Shire theme comes up and plays, and it's kind of and I'm sure musically you can speak more to why that is as well. But, from a psychological standpoint, it's really like it's a core bonding. It's like, these two people are almost like inseparable now. Like,
yep.
There's probably not.
They are the same.
They are the same. Yes. There is probably not a lot that can happen to Sam and Frodo throughout the course of their lifetime at this point that would shake them.
Yeah.
That would shake their relationship. So basically that's what a trauma bond is. Yeah. Is you make it through something traumatic with somebody and you're going to have to you know, you're gonna have to, like, you're basically gonna have to kill one of them. I mean, in order, like, for lack of a better way of saying, you know, we're talking fiction.
You have to, no choice.
Yep,
do it.
We're talking fiction. Fiction only. So
no, in terms of, like, you don't have to kill them, of course. Yeah. The idea is, like, that's the only thing that's gonna get between them. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And even then, not always.
Yeah.
Exactly. But let's see.
So yeah, the music reflects that. It's wonderfully. Beautiful. Moving, beautiful. Wonderful end of the trilogy, wonderful end of the season, I think.
It is. Now, not end of the season yet. Let me say my bit. It's a very short bit.
Of course.
But I wanted to point out that during the scene, we hear the Fellowship theme one last time.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, we have heard the Fellowship theme multiple times in this episode alone. So the ones that I've pointed out were Frodo arriving, was the Sam arriving to save Frodo from Shelob, the Fellowship saying for Frodo and charging onward. Mm-hmm. And now we hear all of them put together. Yep. And each time the energy changes. Right, each time the energy changes, the arrangement changes, the size changes. The first time we hear it, it's a very big, brassy statement, very short statement, but it announces that hope is not lost. Sam is here. The Fellowship can still move forward. Mm-hmm. Bomb, 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 bomb.
Yep.
And then he gets in the fight with Shelob, and that changes. Then the second one, for Frodo, we hear the biggest statement. Choir, brass, strings, percussion, woodwinds, everybody going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Saying with this massive statement as they charge forward and do the very last thing they'll ever have to do for the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And just fight and distract Sauron. Even if they don't realize that's what they're doing anymore. Yep. Then the last time we hear it is here, when they're all reunited. And it's, again, this is why it also often gets us, like, it often gets confused as a theme for the characters of the Fellowship. It's not. Howard Shore has stated it's not. It's a theme meant to track their journey.
Yeah.
And so this is the end of the journey.
Mm-hmm.
The Fellowship has succeeded. They got Frodo to the mountain. He was able to destroy the ring. The ring is gone. Sauron will never again threaten the age of Middle Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a much more somber, calm one. And this is the moment where, like, they all get together and they realize, oh, Frodo is going to be okay. He woke up. All right. So he's not going to die. And there's that satisfaction, that knowledge. Wow, we just did it.
We just did
all of that. And it's just kind of a solid, soft celebration kind of thing. Of just the relief that no one else died. Boromir's not there with him. He died like a G.
Yeah.
He's awesome. But the rest of them just kind of were able to survive still.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there is a takeaway from this, I want to point out, I've said this before, but when you're using themes, you cannot just restate the theme.
Right.
A theme, by definition, represents something. It represents typically a person, a journey, an idea, a culture, something. It represents something. And throughout any story, the thing it represents is going to grow. It's going to change. It will not be the same. The Fellowship now is not the same Fellowship that it was when it started.
Yes.
And so each time the Fellowship is reintroduced and their goals are reintroduced, we have to have that theme grow and change with them. Like I said, for characters, I'm a big believer that if you've got a character theme, start with two versions of it. Start with a character theme for the very beginning of the story, and then write a version of how do they change. Here's their character theme for when they're done changing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you identify each of the moments where that character experiences something that pushes them along that direction of change.
Mm-hmm.
And you find a way to adapt the theme to kind of get them further along that transformation from one theme to the next. You can do it the same for journeys. What is the end of the journey? What is the start of the journey? Here, it's kind of fun. The very first time we hear the Fellowship theme in the first movie, it's a big brassy fanfare to let you know this is an awesome heroic thing that's about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The last time we hear it, very soft performances.
Yep.
And so each time it gets used, it's different. It's changed. There's no, like, all right, copy and paste and put it here, because the character doesn't copy paste and put over here. The journey doesn't get copy pasted put over here.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that just being a rant to say, if you're going to use themes, make sure you have a plan for how and when you're going to use them. And every time you use them, how are you going to change them to make them reflect the change in the story?
Exactly.
Change.
Yep.
I felt the sad. I just had to say it one more time.
Just had to say it. Yep.
Yep. All right. So long breath out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of the season.
That's everything.
All right. We are done.
Yep.
We will be back in April, people. So it's a very short break. But we want to take a break for season two because we are changing the format slightly. We're going to start introducing like little tips on how to use things like reverb. We're going to start doing product reviews for like free libraries. We'll start basically focusing more on helping you actually build your career as a media composer, as a composer in general.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a couple really cool interviews with directors, with writers, with other composers lined up. We've got 12 movies that we are going to do.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We got a lot of really fun stuff. We're also going to do Q&A segments. So if you have questions and you would like to have them submitted for us to answer on a podcast, we'll have more details. But for now, if you have them, send them to tabletopcomposer@gmail.com, or you can just message me on Instagram, tabletopcomposer. Find me, send me a message. Let me know you got a question for the podcast. I'd love to hear it. We are going to be, the first episode is going to be a live stream. So mm-hmm. keep an eye out for that too. I will also be announcing that within a month or so about the date, time, and it'll be really fun to kind of do that live.
Mm-hmm.
Any announcements that you can think of that I missed?
For me or any announcements? No, not that I can think of. I appreciate you guys all welcoming me into the Tabletop Composer community.
It's been fun.
Yep, it has been fun. Me and Steven have talked about, you know, doing a podcast for a very, very long time. Before the days of Tabletop Composer.
Oh, yeah. We're millennials. I think all of us talk
we,
about
we all had to do podcasts and consulting. So, you know, we it's something that we've been talking about for a very long time, and it's, but you know, it took, you know, you almost talk about trauma bonding. There's been like a lot of things that have happened over the years that have kind of gotten us to this point here.
Yep.
And you know,
that's
it's,
for sure.
Yeah. So it's been a wild ride, but I think it's been a good one. And you know,
good one indeed.
I'm happy to keep it going. And you know, like I said, I appreciate the warm welcome into the Tabletop Composer community on screen.
Wonderful.
I've always been a little bit behind the screen,
behind the scenes,
but now I'm on screen. So.
All right. Thank you very much, everyone. We appreciate all of you. Mm-hmm. And I will see you in my next videos, but we will see you in the next podcast. All right.
All right.
See ya.
Bye-bye.